Today we're going to be talking about everyone's favorite subject. We're going to be talking about phone objections and the one thing that I learned that radically changed my results. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. All right, you guys know how I like to roll. Not a lot of dicking around on my podcast. Let's get right down to business. So we're going to be talking about this whole concept of getting objections. And one really cool thing that I learned that made all the difference in me getting better results. Now, just to get us all learning from the same perspective, I'm going to go ahead and say it for you, just so that we don't feel any peer pressure here, as if like we're all hanging out together. I want to put everybody immediately like at ease. There are people out there that say, I love cold calling. It's my favorite thing in the world. I'm a sales trainer, and I've been in sales, in the trenches, for 33 years. And I'm going to tell you, I don't like cold calling. I am going to be the first self-proclaimed wuss in the group to raise my hand and tell you, I don't enjoy cold calling. I mean, like, what a horrible thing for a sales trainer to say. But hey, listen, I'm being honest with you, right? I mean, I'm being straight up here. To me, it's a necessary evil. It's not something that I sit there and go, oh shit, I got to make these cold calls and everything else. No. And I do everything I can not to avoid them. I put it on the schedule. I am really dedicated to that schedule, as if like the same kind of dedication when I set an appointment with one of you guys and we're going to be talking about maybe being a coach or doing some training for your organization. I wouldn't blow off that meeting. So I don't blow off my cold calling. But I want to be crystal clear. I don't sit around saying, oh, joy, I get to get my ass kicked today on the phone. I can't freaking wait for that. I don't do that. But what I do enjoy are the results that I get. And not only from cold calling, but from doing this podcast and sending out emails and, you know, all the things that I do. Because if you've been listening to me for a while, and God bless you if you have, because, you know, I mean, I'm definitely an acquired taste. You know that I don't believe in just clinging to any one form of outreach. So this is one of many things that I do. But I'm also going to say and be the first one to raise my hand and tell you that the part that probably irritates me and gives me a little bit of anxiety the most when it comes to cold calling are the objections, right? I mean, I can't be alone in that. I can't be the only one right now involved in this whole little interaction that we're having that feels that way. I know that this is one of the major things that I would even venture to say, if I may play Dr. Phil for a moment, I would have to say that this is one of those things subconsciously that has us embrace avoidance activities. Now, avoidance activities are things that we do to keep us from doing something that's actually more important that we know we should be doing. And these things include just an overabundance of administrative things. For those of you who work in a manufacturing type of environment, especially all my friends, shout out to all my friends in the printing industry, you guys know, I mean, like, you know, like spending too much time in the plant and all, like, and I got to put out fires, and if I want it right, done right, I got to do it myself. And some of that might be the case, but many times it's an avoidance activity. So I get all that, but there was this one thing that I learned that radically changed how I viewed an objection. And it wasn't like some cutesy little thing. You know, like sometimes these sales trainers would teach all these little cutesy little things, and it sounds good on a podcast, and maybe it reads well on a blog, or certainly if they were giving your team a little rah-rah motivational speech, everybody would be all pumped up and ready to go out and tear bumpers off of cars until you actually try it. And you realize that it sounded good, it read well, it made for a very good, hell yes, all caps, of course. but it really wasn't practical. And, you know, not to beat up people, but sometimes that's what you get when you have somebody teaching you something who hasn't been in the trenches like in a decade, right? So you're getting this right from me. And I never stopped selling. And even in positions where I was leading other salespeople, one of the things I always said when they were interviewing me for that job, I'm a field commander. I don't want to be leading my team from behind a desk. And I'm the kind of field commander that wants to pick up a gun and get in the fight. If that bothers you, don't hire me. Hire somebody else. So I've always considered myself in the trenches. So in order to set this up today properly, I want to really paint a really vivid picture of the people that you're trying to get a hold of, these decision makers, right? I'm assuming that we always are calling people with the highest level of authority to make this deal happen, right? To bring it to fruition. That was on my word of day thing today, by the way. So I thought I'd work in fruition. I also bet somebody like $25 that I could say fruition at least 2 to 3 times. So, you know, what can I say? I'm not so young, but I still need the money. But now, let me just take you through this. Now, here come some Paulisms. And Paulisms, of course, are these things that I beat to death on my blog and in my podcast. These statistics that I've been spewing at you guys for years. I want you to look at everything your potential client is involved in. There are internal and external meetings, right? Yeah, duh, Castain. There are internal and external clients. There are phone calls. There are voicemails. There are an overabundance of emails. There are decisions to be made. There are fires to be put out. And now comes the Paulism or isms. There are numerous interruptions. And one of my favorite pet statistics, if you will, is really it would be a few of them, all under the same thing about interruptions. And Wendy Cole from Time Magazine, a while ago, by the way, this is like 2002, and I think it's gotten worse. She did this whole write-up and everything and did a lot of research. And one of the things she shared was that the average person is interrupted from what they're doing 7 times an hour. And when I say that to people, there's a lot of people that say, yeah, that's like the least of it. It's like 2 to 3 times that amount for me. Other people, I think they sit there in disbelief. And I think part of the reason why we can't believe it's true is because we might be thinking as an interruption as negative, right? So you're thinking only of the negative things, or that pain in the ass coworker, or your boss like stopping you, asking you about those TPS reports or whatever it is. Interruptions could be good things as well. I mean, it could be the client calling you up and giving you an order, right? It could be that call out of the blue from someone that you had met with a few months ago. They're ready to do business now. I mean, granted, I'll take that interruption all day long, but unless you have nothing to do with your day, it stopped you from doing something else. Just the act of our smartphones, right? And the fact that we have them surgically attached to the palm these days. Think about all the times that you're checking that. And different studies on that that show on the low end, it's like 40, 50 times a day to well over 150 times a day. So now, this brings us to the point, and I'm going to get into exactly what I learned. This is setting it up beautifully, if I do say so myself. So you have all these interruptions, right? And when we add them up, the average person is losing, according to research that was done by an organization out in New York City by the name of Basics. They found that the average person loses about 2.1 hours a day. I would really have to emphasize that they said the average person. I maintain that a decision maker, the higher level, the higher we go with a decision maker, I think that that number dramatically increases. So I think it would probably be a heck of a lot more, probably to maybe like 3 to 4 hours a day that they're losing in interruptions. Now, the main reason why we're losing so much time in interruptions. It's not just the interruption itself, because many times an interruption might be 3 minutes here, 3 minutes there. It could be radical, you know, interruptions and amount of time that you're spending addressing that interruption. It could be, heck, it could be 30 minutes or 20 minutes, but generally what we see is that they're quick interruptions. It's a phone call. It's an email. It's a quick conversation or interaction with the coworker. But here's where it gets interesting, and here's where it's going to set up today's podcast. The amount of time that it takes to get back on task after you've been interrupted is about 23 minutes and 15 seconds. So I want to say that again. The average amount of time it takes everyone, these decision makers you're trying to call, certainly us too, because we get interrupted a lot as sales professionals, it's 23 minutes and 15 seconds, which is dramatic. So when you call, this person at the other end of the phone needs to make a decision. And that decision, a good part of it, is kind of made at the subconscious level. And the decision they're making, you ready? I mean, radical information here. And this isn't even like the main part of what I want to talk to you about, but radical stuff here. That's why I make the big bucks. They're asking, is this interaction worth 23 minutes and 15 seconds? They have all these things that are going on. Now, right about now, I catch a lot of crap from other sales thought leaders. And they say that you're really putting a bad message across to all the aspiring sales rock stars out there. Which gets me kind of pissed off if they say that, because that's like my phrase to say, aspiring sales rock star. It's like, who the hell do you think you are? First of all, criticizing Uncle Paul here. But you're going to take my phrase? Screw you, man. Anyway, but enough of that, right? That's something for me and my therapist to tackle. But they get annoyed and they say, well, you're putting a bad message. You're having them believe that they're interrupting somebody. Of course you're interrupting somebody. I mean, you know, I am not into positive thinking to the level that it becomes unrealistic. I mean, if you're staring at a pile of crap, you're not going to sit there and say it's a bed of roses. Acknowledge it for what it is. And you ready for this? Walk around it. I mean, seriously, you don't have to go and obsess over, oh my God, there is a pile of crap here. But, I mean, you don't go and sit there and say, you know what, I have a positive outlook. That is not crap. That is just that is fertilizer for roses. No, it's a pile of crap. Walk around it and move on. It's the same thing with the phone. And I would maintain that you want to be interrupting people. I mean, how crazy is that thought? Now, right about now, you're like, yeah, I was kind of with you, Castain, and now you went off the deep end. It's going to be time for me to get another guy to listen to on these podcasts. Well, uno momento there. My feeling is you want to be interrupting these people because I want to be talking to busy people, not because, you know, it's such a high quality conversation, but because if they're busy, I know typically things are going on in their business and they have a higher probability of being able to afford me. I don't want to be talking to people that have nothing but time on their hands to either jerk me around or to quickly tell me, I can't afford you, Paul, because I have nothing going on in my business. And you know, the people that you want and the people that I want, we are going to be interrupting them. But here's the thing now. You ready? So we know that they're very, very busy, just like you are. But they're getting lots of calls from other aspiring sales rock stars. They've got all those other things that I mentioned to you going on. So now they're making this decision. At least part of it is subconscious and it becomes very automatic to them. Is this worth having to like spend the next 23 minutes, 15 seconds to get back on task? So guess what they do? And here's where the big revelation comes in, at least from my perspective. What happens is that they embrace an auto-eject. Something, and an auto-eject is something that they have in place, a default, if you will, to get you off of the phone and get them back on task quicker. And it's things like not interested, no time. Well, we're all set. We're under contract. Even things that we would say that are not so much objections, but would fall under the stalling category, like, well, send me your information, and if I'm interested, I'll call you. Call me back next month. One of them that we're going to be hearing very, very soon, I would tell you it's going to be about, oh, I don't know, about 6 weeks from now, you're going to start hearing, call me back after the holidays. During the summer, I bet you, those of you, at least here in the U.S., you were hearing people say, well, call me back after Labor Day. Many times as we're approaching July 4th week, well, call me back after the 4th. And not to sit here and demean the very people that we're calling. But, I mean, honest to God, I think there's probably people out there that say, call me back after Groundhog Day. Or some, you know, like these crazy holidays. Call me back after Chocolate Lover's Day, right? I mean, it's just, it's nutty. So, what you have to know, and this is the revelation here, is that the first objection that people throw at you is generally that default. It's generally an auto eject. It's not necessarily the real reason why they don't want to consider it. In fact, they might not have even heard you at that point, to be quite honest with you. I've always felt, and I've said this to other sales reps before, it would be a great experiment just to call some people up and say, you know what, sorry to bother you. My accountant told me I made way too much money last year. I need to give away $2 million. How can I get that to you? And I bet you you'd have a lot of people saying not interested because it's their default. It's what they're used to saying to you. And many times they're so used to saying it without even hearing you out because immediately they're thinking, okay, this is somebody who's trying to sell me something. It's somebody soliciting. It's, you know, not to use an old phrase, it's a telemarketer, right? And it has this kind of bad imagery for them. And it's not necessarily how they feel. Now, there is a sales company out there who made, I think, a few hundred million dollars more than I did last year that I completely disagree with. I respect them, but I just completely disagree with them on this. They have this phrase, which I think is a shitty phrase to have, and it's just a really bad mindset. And they say that buyers are liars. Now, it's an easy to remember, it's catchy and everything, but to embrace a mindset that people are generally going to lie to you when you're trying to get into a relationship with someone, I don't think that's a very good foundation to build a relationship on, one where you're not trusting them and they're not trusting you. That's not a good place. I look at it very, very differently, and you're going to think that I'm also being cute here, and it's a play on words, but I want you to hear me out. My philosophy is not that buyers are liars. It's not that people are lying to you. It's just like within the first few minutes of a phone call, and in some cases the first, 20, 30 seconds where we're getting gunned down, how have you earned the right to full disclosure? So again, you may say, well, it's just really the same thing. It's not the same thing. I'm not looking at them as lying to me like they woke up today, things to do, lie to Paul Castain. I don't look at it that way. I look at it like, how the hell would they know me and trust me and like me, all that kind of cute stuff, to give me the truth? And it's more than likely that I interrupted them. So they're looking to get me off of their phone. So when you understand that, it all becomes a lot easier. First of all, I think it removes our ability to take an objection personally, unless they like tell you to go F yourself. That's pretty personal, right? Or they personally attack you. It really does, if you think about it, removes our ability now to take it personally. And that's always a great perspective to go by. But also, I think it also it helps us to actually engage in a conversation with them. So, but here's the problem. You know, we really need to get past that first objection, right? I'm hoping I'm hearing a lot of does right now. And when you get past that first objection, one thing that I've seen, and this is why it changed my results, certainly all my coaching clients, their results, a lot of people who have been through the different courses that I teach, it's improved their results, is that when you get past that first objection, you're getting what's really on their mind. And when you get to hear what's really on someone's mind, well, then now you can really have a conversation. You can have a more intelligent conversation, not one that's based on just something that somebody's throwing at you to get you off of their phone. Now, the average sales rep, you ready for this? This is going to shock you. And I say that with every degree of sarcasm I can muster up right now. The average sales rep does not get past the first objection because either they submit, they tap out after that first objection because they don't want to piss somebody off or annoy them, and they simply move on. I also think that the average person doesn't get past the first objection because they were taught improperly. Or maybe they were taught properly, but the problem is that some of these things that we've been taught have been around a long time. And one of the things I mentioned on my blog just a few days ago, I think it was just 2 days ago, you know, like there, I mean, and there's all different types of examples I could give you, but it amazes me how many people still use that feel, felt, found objection buster, if you will. It's not even an objection buster. And the thing I want to tell you that long before I wanted to be a sales trainer, so, and the reason why I'm saying that to you, long before I wanted to be a sales trainer, so that I want you to understand that this isn't me judging something through the eyes of a sales trainer. We're going to be a little bit more critical than the average person. Plus, you know, right now that I'm a sales trainer, I mean, I've trained over 10,000 people, so I've heard a lot of it, right? In fact, I can pretty much tell you I've heard it all. You know, it's a different type of way of looking at it. So long before I wanted to be a sales trainer, I'm guessing it was, and if I'm off, I'm off by like a year, forgive me, right? It was like 1992. I remember giving someone a complete eye roll and saying to myself, I can't believe this asshat is using this stupid, overplayed rebuttal on me. 1992. This was. And how many years ago was that? I was sick of that shit then. And now, you know, it's these people that you're calling, they've heard most of these things. So some of these things, and forgive me, I know that I kid around. I know that I'm a wise ass. I'm really just talking from the heart now. So please don't take it like an attack. It's me, you know, it's a little bit of tough love that we're addressing here. But, you know, this stuff might have been okay in 1992, I will even go as far as to say some of this stuff really goes back further. Might have been okay in like 1968. But today, these people, I mean, as much as we're trained on how to handle them, you know that buyers also go for training on how to beat you guys up on price and how to handle sales rate. You do know that, right? They're like, you know, like I always think about, you ever see these shows on TV where somebody used to like beat Vegas and all that, and now they're hired by Vegas to keep other sleazebags from screwing Vegas over, right? It's kind of like that. You have some sellouts among the sales ranks, and they go on to the other side and they give away our playbook. But so you really have to get better at that. But now once you improve your ability to get past that first objection, well, remember, you get to hear what's really on their mind, and it's going to radically increase your odds. So there are two rules that I want you to know about. One is a rule that I haven't heard in a while. It was a rule that was around a lot when I first started selling. And many of you, I know, are still being taught it here and there, and I want to give you my spin on it. So the rule, and they might call it something different, but it's really known by the rule of three no's. So when you're calling into a company and you attempt to get an appointment, right? I'm not going to say pitch because I just hate that term. So when you're trying to have a conversation and they gun you down, the rule of three states that you don't politely exit that call until they've told you no three times. In other words, they've thrown three objections at you. Now, the thing is with the rule of three is that I really believe in sales one of our biggest problems is that we embrace the extreme ends of a theory. So we have one end of this theory where we have the rule of three. And I'm going to tell you that I'm probably ballsier than most people. I sell in a really aggressive market, in the New York market, but I also sell internationally. But I'm talking about the people right out here in my backyard. You guys know what everybody says about New Yorkers. We're brash, we're to the point, we're a little abrasive, right? I mean, I know it's a shock, but I am telling you that if you make me tell you no three times when calling me, on the third time, you're probably removing my hand from your throat. I'm telling you, because to me, at that point, you're being a dick. And it's not even a sales thing. It's, I don't even care if you're trying to feed your family. It's like, which one of these overabundance of no's didn't you grasp? But now that's one extreme. But let's take a look at the other extreme. The other extreme is something many of you are guilty of, because you don't want to piss somebody off. You don't want to rock the boat. You want to be able to call them back another time. So when they throw one of these objections at you, what's happening is that in a very nice way, you've become like Tommy Boy. Remember Tommy Boy when they were talking about, we don't take no for an answer. And then every scene after, okay, works for me. And they're just getting up. And like on the first, he's like packing his shit and he's leaving, right? So we don't want to be that. So now I just painted two extremes for you. And what we're forgetting about is the middle. So my advice is, don't follow the rule of three. I mean, unless somehow it's like a company policy and your boss is going to go and fire you, whatever it is, I say follow the rule of two. And with two, I mean, as it probably explains very, very well on its own, I'm not going to lay down and submit on the first no. But I am not going to go over aggressive and make you tell me no three times. I'm going to wait for two no's, and then I'm going to politely exit that call. So right there, if you stop the podcast and you are laying down after the first no, moving it to two could make a radical difference. Also, if you're going for three plus, I am telling you that this might help you if you move it back to two, create more of a courtship. And that is a very big mindset shift that many of you have to make. I look at my entire process. I don't care if it's calling you on the phone, it's doing these podcasts, it's the stuff I do on social media, my social networks. I don't care if it's the stuff I am sending you or the ideas I'm sharing with you or any other variety, creative things that I do, warm intros that I get from other people. I look at this entire process as a courtship, not something where it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm trying to hit on the skank in the bar. And that's the problem with a lot of people. We're looking at it more desperation and not long term. You know, and to me, if I can get a little corny here, and I also said this on my blog the other day, it's, if we're going to go with this idea of a courtship, you really have to think of the concept of love. And the question I ask audiences when I do keynote speeches is, you know, by a show of hands, how many of you are married? And a lot of hands go up, depending on how young the crowd is, by the way, but hands go up. And I'll say, okay, just for those of you who are married, keep your hand up, and I'll ask somebody, hey, just, you know, help me out here. If we were to try to deconstruct love and the formula for love and creating love in a relationship, when is love supposed to happen? And it's right about then that they're wondering if I had a liquid lunch, or maybe Uncle Paul became one with a joint before he went up on stage. And I'll say, no, it's not a trick question. When I'm just trying to deconstruct love, when is love supposed to happen? Is it after so many dates? After we've been together so many times? Is it after the first fight? Is it after somebody spends, oh, I don't know, $1,300 and, you know, 71 cents on flowers and candy? When is it supposed to happen? And really, you know, just to kind of fast forward this crazy little story, What we always come to the conclusion we come to together by consensus in the audience is that love happens when it happens. And it's the same thing here. When you're courting a prospect, love happens when it happens. So we have to have the patience for the courtship, but the urgency to work at it regularly. So that's why I don't believe in going three no's. But also, it's going to lack the urgency if I just simply accept the very first thing, which I know is typically a default to exit that phone call. So that's the rule of three no's. But there is a way that you can radically get past the first objection. And this one is called the rule of three. So the rule of three, to give credit where credit is due, it's called something else. But I think it was Tom Hopkins in a really good book that he had written. I'm going to guess it was 1982. It was one of the first sales books that I had read. And I think it was How to Master the Art of Selling. It's a really good book. And in that book, I think he was talking about something called the triad theory. So if I'm wrong and it wasn't Tom Hopkins, I want somebody to email me, set me straight so I could give proper credit. But it's not my idea, but it's something that I've embraced since the days when I had hair. And the idea is with the rule of three, Castain's rule of three, is you need to take your typical objections. And what you need to do is create three different responses for them. So let's just say one of the typical objections that you hear is, and many of these have different variations. So you're hearing something that goes like, well, we already have a vendor for that, or we have somebody taking care of that, we're all set, or perhaps we're under contract, right? That's basically the same objection. What you would do is come up with three different responses to that. Let's take another one. Let's just say that you hear, I am way too busy, man. I would not have the time to meet with you or to talk about this or whatever it is. What you do is you come up with three responses for that. I'm sure you hear not interested. You come up with three responses for that. I bet you have people, again, it's not an objection, it's a stall, saying, call me back after the holidays. Okay, great. You know that that's going to happen. What are your three responses to that? You know that people are going to say to you, call me back next month. Well, okay. What is your response to that? So when you come up with three, by the way, it does something for your confidence in a very real way. And like I was mentioning before, the reason why I'm really down on motivational speakers is because most of them, not all of them, I mean, you know, like I think of people like Tony Robbins, who are awesome, and I've learned so much from. I've seen him live. I've taken courses and everything else. There's true substance there. But my beef with a lot of these people is that they're great in getting you pumped up, but there's no substance. It's a lot of showmanship and fluff. But now here, this is a very real confidence booster because it's a lot like martial arts. For those of you who have ever studied martial arts, you know that you're taught multiple ways to defend yourself. So it's never a matter, once you begin to master the different techniques, it's never a matter of, well, could I respond to that attack or could I defend myself? It's more a matter of, how shall I do it? What, I mean, you know, through all the different types of options I have, how shall I respond to that, you know, to that kick or to that strike? So it's a very different mindset that you have. It's no different here in sales. And it's very real. If you can come up with three responses to your typical objections, what this is going to do, when you marry it with my other concept that typically that first objection is more of a blow off. I'm not saying it happens every time. Somebody might be giving you the legit reason. Yes, I am under contract. It is ironclad. I cannot break it. Other cases might be something. They are truly not interested. They heard you out. They're familiar with your company. I don't know. Maybe they're all butthurt over something like you guys did business a while ago, long before you were there, and they want nothing to do with your company. But I'm telling you, for the other 98%, the other 95%, most of them, it's not that they're lying. It's just that they want to get you the hell off the phone so that they can get back to like an inordinate amount of things. right? And by the way, just as a side thing, it would probably be a very interesting little project for you to do. If you work for a company that has a purchasing department, if you have access to some higher level decision makers in your company, they don't necessarily have to be in the purchasing department, and you want to just like have a quick cup of coffee with them or whatever. It never hurts to kind of rub elbows with like people higher up in the food chain. You never know. A little politics there. Well, it would be very interesting if they are in a situation where they get cold calls to ask them if they have a standard blow-off to get people off the phone. I think it'll surprise you. So if you marry this concept that people generally throw the first objection at you, it's almost like the throwaway objection, right? It's that default. It's the auto-eject. And then you marry it in with what I taught you and how to get better and build your phone chops. Well, I think you're going to dramatically increase your odds, and you're going to dramatically increase your results, as I've done. So here's what I'd like to leave you with. If you found some degree of value here, right? Because I'm hoping that this helps you the way it's helped me and certainly all of my coaching clients. What I'd like you to do is to seriously consider joining us this week on September 22nd for a webinar that I'm going to be doing. And it's called, you ready for this? I think it's appropriately named, How to Warm Up Your Cold Calls. So there's a lot of things that I'm going to be sharing. Let me run them down real quick so you get an idea what I have planned for you. First of all, we're going to talk about 30 things to look for in potential clients that will dramatically increase and expedite your deals. Like, wouldn't it be great if you knew where to find people who had a higher degree of urgency that need what you have now as opposed to window shopping and tire kicking? Well, there is. There is a really cool thing that you could be doing in your research. In fact, there's like 30 of them that I'm going to show you that's going to help you. I'm also going to show you how to automate the process of research so that information is coming to you instead of you always having to go to it. And before you like think you have it figured out, you're probably thinking Google Alerts. Well, there are several things you should be doing beyond Google Alerts that are, by the way, like absolutely free, that won't cost you anything. You don't have to go out and buy software or anything like that. We're going to talk about how to craft an objection-resistant dialogue. And when I first started this podcast today, I was saying to you that there's a lot we could be talking about with objections, and there really is a lot to talk about there. I gave you really one concept to get your arms around, but one of the best ways to fight an objection is not to have it in the first place. But the problem is when we analyze what people are saying on the phone, it really lends itself. It basically hands the recipient an objection on a platter. And I want to remove that from the equation. I want to show you something that's much better. And P.S., I am not a fan of using a phone script. I hate them. I don't care how good you are. It usually sounds like a phone script. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how I begin a call. And I'm going to give you a template, and I'm going to send it to you as a Word doc. This way, you can adjust it to your style and your personality. In fact, you're not going to bother me at all if you change it around. I would actually be upset if you didn't, because you see, the way I've written it, it's for me, and it works for my personality. You might want to change it around, but if at least you know the basics of what I'm doing, I think you could really capitalize on that. We're going to talk about how to proactively prevent things like skepticism and doubt and objections. And I always joke around about this, but it's the truth. I mean, people never like lack trust when it comes to sales reps, right? They trust us and they believe us unconditionally, right? I mean, detect the sarcasm there. Of course they doubt us. In fact, the really stale joke that I make, and it's not even a joke, it's a sad reality, even other salespeople don't trust another salesperson. If you think I'm kidding, think about the last time you went in a store or you went into a car dealership and somebody said, can I help you? And you said, I'm just looking. But no, you really are looking to buy, but you just didn't, you know, you want to feel it out. I just got here. I want to get the lay of the land, man. I don't know you yet. I don't know if you're just trying to win the big, like, trip to the, like, salesman's ball. So Even we do it. But we're also going to talk about how to respond to these typical objections that we are talking about. I'm going to give you a three-step formula, and we're even going to dive in to like objections like not interested, under contract, already have a vendor, no time, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to show you a really simple way to generate at least three more appointments each and every week, and I'm going to go into detail with it. So you're going to be happy with that part alone. That's going to give you a nice ROA right there, ROI. We're also going to talk about how to ask for access to a higher level decision maker. And let's stop right there for a minute. We all know, and we've heard it a gazillion times, we need to ask for access to a higher level decision maker. But here's my $1 million question. How do you do that? How do you do that in a way that doesn't totally make this other person, your contact, feel like they're Skippy in the mailroom? How do you do that? Of course you ask for a higher level of decision maker, but how do you do that? That is a really sensitive thing. If you come across the wrong way, you're going to seal that door shut because nobody likes to feel like the asshole, right? So there is a way to do it that's going to help you out, and it's just a nice, easy conversation. It's nothing pitchy. It's nothing salesy. And everybody walks away feeling good. And those are the best. And then we're going to, of course, talk about the second favorite subject that we have, right? The first one is objections. And the second one is all these damn voicemails that we get. So how can we leave a better voicemail? I'm going to talk about four different ones that I use in, not necessarily my practice, but in my day-to-day as a sales rep in the trenches. There are four different types that I use. I'm going to give you the templates for them. Again, as a Word doc so that you change it around to fit your personality. But most importantly, the thing I want you to leave with today is, you know, and it's not just about this upcoming webinar. It's just in general. I'm going to show you how to use the phone as part of a more comprehensive sales mix and not a siloed approach. There are many people out there, they just cling to the phone. There are many sales trainers out there that are just going to teach you the phone. My whole thing here is that I believe in mixed martial arts. I believe that what we have to do is that we have to embrace a lot of different forms of outreach. But the real, to me, the real kicker here is how do I get all of those forms of outreach, the phone and email and snail mail and creative things and FedEx, drop-ins, drop-offs and, you know, LinkedIn and all of these different venues, if you will, how do we get them to work together? So that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. So if you would, if you haven't done so already, I want you to, and please do it soon because we're going to be shutting down registration shortly. If you'll visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockthephone, yoursalesplaybook.com/rockthephone. And on that note, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com, and I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them.